Hello, Michael here. Do you remember receiving some form of sex education? How well do you think it set you up for understanding your body, your sexuality, your sexual health? Well, depending on how old you are, you may have been given the basics, the very basics of reproduction. But as for preparing you for adulthood, so many of us were left in the dark. How would you describe your sex education growing up? And just a heads up, we're going to be talking about sex education or the lack thereof for the next few minutes. So if you have sensitive ears around you, do bear that in mind. Psychosexologist Chantelle Otten is out to change how we talk about sex. She is on a mission to empower people when it comes to their own sexuality. Chantelle's new book is called The Sex Ed You Never Had. And Chantelle, hello. Welcome to Life Matters.
Hi. Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Chantelle, I'm going to just ask you to go back into your school life. What was sex education like for you, and were you an active participant in its distribution?
No, I mean, I went to a Catholic school, so we didn't actually have sex education. We learned how babies were born and how to not have sex, how to wait. But no, I didn't have any sex ed. I was kind of left in the dark like everyone else who went to school with me.
Right, so there lies a tale, and yet you've obviously now branched into a professional sort of support service for those of us who need help coming to grips with some of the big gaps in our knowledge, hence this book, which, by the way, strikes me as like a mini encyclopedia on how our brains and bodies work, and then how we talk and connect with other people's brains and bodies.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what I'm all about. It's the reason why I went down the psychology road and why I got into sexology, because I'm so fascinated by why we feel the way that we feel, why we think the way that we, you know, think, and how we communicate with others. I think it's pretty reflective on just how curious I am about intuition for others.
And your clients, do you find... Because I assume you have people who come seeking your services of all demographics, all backgrounds, all age groups. Do you find that there's differences in what people are seeking knowledge and support for depending on how old they are?
You know what? I really think that over the age of like 20, you know, I see like 20 to like 35, maybe 40, I see a lot more questions around like dating, and then probably like mid-30s to 50s, I hear a lot about like sex and parenting, you know, sex and children, and then, you know, later down the track, it's like how to keep the spark. Well, actually, across all of those spans, like how do you keep the spark alive? But then also like I see people being single in their later years as well. So it's really kind of varied. I wouldn't be able to put it down I can't like put it down to an age. I think everyone's
that's
got
interesting.
Different questions.
Sure. Well, let's talk about a couple of things you just touched on, and then we'll move on to other parts of the book. But when it comes to keeping the spark alive in a long-term relationship, that must be one of the big ones. What kind of advice generally do you give people about reigniting a spark in some cases?
Yeah, so I think, you know, we've been taught this narrative that sex is spontaneous and that it's something that you should just naturally feel like you want to do. But research shows that that's not true. You actively have to work on your sex life. You have to prioritize it, you know, and things do get tricky, especially when you have a family, especially if you're in a long-term relationship and you kind of like your partner's not mysterious to you anymore. You feel like you know everything about them, and you might be having sex the exact same way every single time. Like you have the same sexual menu. So I always tell people to remain curious, because of course you don't know everything about your partner. You have to have your individual lives as well. You should be going to do things that you want to do, and they should be doing things that they want to do, and then you can meet in the middle. You should prioritize your sex life. You know, it's not spontaneous. You do have to work on it. Maybe that is a lot more, you know, kissing. Maybe that's you know, sensual massage. Like there needs to be some kind of warm up there. And then, you know, I think there's things that you can add into the bedroom room, you can bring in toys, you can add in, you know, you can go to different rooms, you can, you know, spice it up in many different ways. But I think you have to kind of be a little bit more open-minded and change your sexual menu as you go along.
And so many older people these days, Chantel, might have actually exited a long-term relationship and may be single for the first time in a long time, and they may be on the dating scene, perhaps online. Is that a scenario that comes up with you, with clients?
Yeah, so I'm an ambassador for Bumble Australia, which is a dating app. And yeah, I honestly see people across all age ranges. My oldest patient was in her late 80s and she was single and she was having fun with her neighbor. So we really do talk about how to have fun, but also like stay safe as well, be protected, honor your self-worth, you know, have some sense of empowerment around what you like, who you are and what you want to do.
And when you say stay safe, I assume you mean in a broad sense, not just sexually safe in terms of health, but also psychologically safe too.
Yeah, psychologically, I think also like scenario safe as well. I think, you know, sexual, like STIs, they are on the rise in the older generations too, because they feel like, oh, I've gone through menopause and I don't need to use safe sex. That is something that you do need to do, or you need to get tested, you know, every once in a while as well. But yeah, I think it's also about like not compromising. Like you do what you want to do in the bedroom. Don't do anything that you feel uncomfortable doing.
Yeah. My guest is psychosexologist Chantel Otten. We're talking about her new book, The Sex Ed You Never Had. And Chantel breaks down every aspect of our anatomy, how it works with other people, how perhaps it could work differently to the way you thought it could work with other people. It's really great at really being no holds barred, but very factual. And Chantel, just if you could explain to all of us, you often refer in the book to people as either penis owners or vulva owners. Why use that terminology these days?
Because gender is a construct. A gender means like who you feel like you are. And if we refer to everyone who has a vulva as a woman or everyone who has a penis as a man, we are doing a disservice to people who don't identify in that way. And we really need to be more inclusive in our language. So this is the first step in terms of sex education to really understanding the variety of gender, of sexuality. And, you know, it's a colourful world out there. We need to start speaking in proper terms.
And so saying, do you think sex education at both a school level but also at an adult level is adapting to the community's wider definitions of sexual and gender identity? Is it keeping up?
Yeah, I do think that it's well on its way there, and I have to give a shout out to all the sex educators in schools who are doing a really amazing job. I think it's probably people like my age and upwards that need this book, or like in their 20s and upwards that really didn't have like the sex ed that was inclusive. And I really do hope that this is a safe space for people to really understand sexuality from a non-biased, like non-judgmental way.
A really interesting part of the book, and there's many, but one of the ones that struck me, Chantel, is around sex and disability. Now, your partner is Dylan Alcott. He's a renowned Grand Slam and Olympian wheelchair tennis player. You've both spoken publicly about the misconceptions around disability and sex. Do you want to put some of those to rest again today?
I mean, you know, I think that there is a narrative that people who have a disability are not sexual beings, and that is absolutely not true. And I think that if you actually, you know, if we as a community talk to people with disabilities and ask questions around what their likes and wants are, then we can do a better job and not be afraid. Like, I think that the problem when I got with Dylan was I really saw that so many people were like, but how do you do it? But what do you do? Is that even on the menu? And I think that's so rude. Why don't you ask him like what he wants to do? You know, like why are you judging? Of course, you know, people with disabilities have a sexual appetite. Like, I just think it's so bizarre that because we don't understand something, we stereotype it as too hard or too weird or, you know, strange. And that's just absurd for me. We need to be more inclusive.
I just want to explain to people that you and Dylan have been very open about, you know, your sexual life together on podcasts, and I've heard some of those episodes. So I ask that with that as a precursor here, Chantel. But it seems to me,
of course,
okay, just so everyone understands, I'm not trying to incur you. I found it really kind of entertaining and amusing that in one podcast you talk about when you and Dylan first got together, you were the most nervous of the two.
Oh my God. Well, I don't know if I was the most nervous. I think he was pretty damn nervous as well. But
oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, no, he was pretty nervous. We were both just like, all right, here we go. I think I was nervous because I've never been with someone with a disability. It's like, but to be honest, it's like anytime you have sex with someone new, you're nervous. You know, how's it going to work? Is it going to be good? Are we going to like each other? What if it's a flop? Like, what do we do then? You know, it's pretty normal to have nerves. I would be concerned if I wasn't nervous, to be honest.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. And on that point, in a wider sense, does sexual performance anxiety still play a role amongst many of the people you see?
I think for most people that I see, absolutely. You know, if you're unsure about something with your sexuality, you're going to be a bit nervous about it. That might play into how you behave and perform in the bedroom. But we have to remember that sex is about pleasure. It's not meant to be performative. You're there to have a good time. It's about being present and really dropping into the moment. So, you know, that's a huge thing that I work with in my clinic.
And also, of course, something that's been recognised now in our education system more and more, and also increasingly in legislation, is the nature of consent. How do you talk about that in your book?
The nature of consent, I mean, I think it's bizarre that we're at this place that consent seems like such a hard topic. Consent is not hard. It's just that we should have been taught literally since we were toddlers, not about sexual consent, but about asking, you know, do you want a hug? Can I have a hug? Can I have a smooch? You know, can we snuggle? Or like, do you like this? What about if I do this? I think that consent is something that we should have all learned a lot more about beyond like, you know, no means no, because no means no is just it puts the person who's uncomfortable on the spot. Do you want this? What if they don't feel comfortable? What if they're scared? What if they've got anxiety? What if they're in shock? It's very hard and difficult to say no to someone, especially if you don't feel like you've got choices. It should be like, hey, like, is this good? Like, yes, this is great. Like, let's keep going. If you ever see anyone who looks uncomfortable, that's a time to pause. You know, that's a time to really like get in touch with each other and think like, what's going on here? Is there anything I can help you with that will make you feel more comfortable? Or should we give this a place for now and put this on pause?
Well, just as we finish up here and we talk here about things like consent, are you concerned at all about where consent is placed in the minds of young people when so many people of the next generation growing up, their first exposure of sex and sexuality is through online pornography?
Yeah, well, I mean, like, porn is meant to be for entertainment. It's not meant to be for education. So looking at it and thinking like, this is the way that I'm meant to have sex and it's meant to be this rough and it's meant to be like, you know, there's no condoms here, there's no consent questions here. This is not an exam, this is not an education piece. You know, it's there for people's entertainment down the line. And of course, there's been a lot of work around ethical porn that is inclusive of things like consent and safe sex. But I am concerned, and I do think that that's why this book is important, because it is saying to people, you know what, like, let's relearn, like, let's relearn your sex life. Let's talk about it in a healthier way, and let's give you the tools to be confident in the way that you talk about consent, that you talk about sex, you know, and that you behave in the bedroom.
It's all about empowerment. That's what it's about. And Chantel, it's been great to talk to you. Thanks very much indeed.
Thank you for having me. Have a great day.
You too. Psychosexologist Chantel Otten. Her new book is called The Sex Ed You Never Had.